Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison, here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. Yes, while GEICO could help you rack up more moolah faster than you can say metamorphosis, they've also been the fastest growing auto insurer for more than 10 years. That's more like it. Furthermore, GEICO has fast and friendly claim service. That might seem like an oxymoron, but it's not. All the more reason to say no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
What's up, guys? Organ Nation News Podcast. My name is Solomon Elite at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. You're joined by George Flores at George C. Flores 22 on Twitter. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How are you guys?
Doing good. And we're also joined by a guest from Red94.net, Forrest Walker. How you doing, man?
Hey, pretty good. Glad to be here.
Good. Thanks for coming on. We actually have a lot to talk about. We're going to start answering questions first, and then we're going to go into some other stuff. So the first question I got was, what free agent should the Rockets most go after in free agency? So I'll answer this first. I think you have to go by best available free agent. So you got to go, in my opinion, you got to go Durant, then you got to go Mike Conley, then you got to go Al Horford, and then, you know, Nick Batum, and then so on and so on. What about you guys?
I totally agree with that, actually. I think Kevin Durant's a pipe dream, so I think maybe Al Horford might be the more realistic answer, and I think it fits well with Mike D'Antoni's system and stuff like that. So I think Horford is probably number one, followed by Conley and Batum and those kind of guys.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with. I've been on record as being in love with Mike Conley for a long time, so that sounds fantastic to me. I think Horford's also a great player, but there are plenty of good players out there. I don't know how many game changers there are, but I think you've listed the three guys who would really make a difference.
Yeah, and second question is, okay, it's pretty funny. How pissed were you guys when you heard about Harden's All-NBA status? So I wasn't that mad. Honestly, I expected the outcome to be just that he wouldn't make the All-NBA team. Was I disappointed? Sure, but I mean, you can't control the voters, and basically, I think he should have made it. I think he had the resume, the stats. He had he carried the team on offense. The team was seventh in offense despite being terrible, basically, on all the other minutiae that goes involved in being a good NBA offense. You know, passing the ball, player movement, all that stuff. They still managed to be seventh in offensive efficiency, and they still managed to make the playoffs, you know, winning 41 games. So I think that was good enough to warrant an All-NBA vote. What about you guys?
They're going to hate this, but I actually am kind of glad he didn't make the All-NBA team. I don't think it's a huge deal, and my hope is that perhaps it'll anger him enough, it'll get him more motivated. I think he played well enough to get on there, but the voters clearly were going by intangibles and by the narrative of what's going on. It's hard to argue that kind of stuff because we're not in the locker room, you know, we're not spending every day with James Harden, so it's weird to say how much he is or isn't doing there, but everyone clearly thought he wasn't doing enough, so maybe this will make him try to show everybody up again.
Yeah, and I mean, I just think the narrative was against him all season long. I mean, you know, Rockets totally underperforming, him coming into camp out of shape and stuff like that. I think that just hurts him from the beginning, despite having, you know, historic numbers that only Jordan, LeBron, and Oscar Robertson have ever put up in a season. So I think it's not very surprising. I think he's deserving, but it's not very surprising.
Yeah, and I think I'm kind of a mix in between. I think, yeah, I agree. I was disappointed in Harden this season. In that aspect, I do agree with you, Forrest. But I think, you know, to penalize him, I think he should have still made all third NBA team. You know, I think he still deserves a spot over Klay Thompson, despite how good the Warriors did this season. And Damian Lillard, I think he deserved a spot over him, despite the Blazers winning 45-46 games, where everybody expected them to be like the last seed in the Western Conference. Yeah, I pretty much agree. I'm somewhere in the middle. I think he should have made it. I just think the narrative was against him. As you said, George, I think all along, Harden's at a disadvantage with anything involved in voting, because immediately off the bat, people don't like him. And immediately off the bat, people just dislike his game. They don't like his demeanor. They see all these videotapes of Harden getting backdoored and just getting killed on defense. And that's pretty much what drives perception. I think that's a lot of what had to do in last year's MVP voting. Although I admit Steph Curry was, you know, certainly well deserved of an MVP candidate. I just think immediately off the bat, Harden got knocked because of perception. People just don't like him as much. And I mean, yeah, that's my take on it.
Yeah, he's gonna have to work twice as hard to get the same number of plaudits as other people do. But I don't know. Sometimes that's the name of the game. People really haven't liked him since like 2013. So I'm not really sure what happened. I guess Dwight Howard came over, and the Dwight Howard ill will spilled over onto him or something. But yeah, he's just not been anyone's favorite for a while. So they're just gonna have to win a lot of games and shut everybody up. That's just where it's at.
Yeah, and I agree. I think they do need to at least win 45 games for Harden to make an NBA team, All NBA team again this year. What about you, George?
Yeah, it's an uphill battle for sure. I don't know, as Forbes was saying, I don't know where the perception of him changed. I think NBA Twitter Vine culture definitely doesn't help, and it's just going to be an uphill battle. I don't know that he'll ever get that, because I don't think we're ever going to see a unanimously loved player. So I think James Harden will never see that, and it's just going to be tough.
Our next question is from Daniel. He emails us a question. Has the national media been unfair to this Rockets team? Okay, so this leads into my first topic is, you know, the perception of this team. It's completely trashed from where it was a year ago. I just think, you know, yeah, the Rockets had a terrible season, but it's not a toxic environment. I still think largely this is a good organization, and I think, you know, they have a lot of stability in management, in ownership, and in coaching. Every coach they've had since 1979 has served 4 years. I think it's taken a big hit this year. And I think it's, you know, a lot of it is deserved because they did underachieve this season. I think they could have won at least 50 games. But yeah, I think it's, to some extent, yes, I do think it's unfair. But that's just the way it is.
Ooh, man, your stat about the coaches is, I don't know. I have not been on board with what's happened for the last summer. I'm not ready for 4 years of Mike D'Antoni. I'm really going to have to be talked into D'Antoni, which is fine. I mean, he might just change my tune when he gets in there. He gets a chance, of course. But I have had a lot of faith in this organization for a long time because they've always been very reliable, very upfront, you know, like consistently competent at everything they do. I do feel like this year and everything that went wrong has kind of messed people up. Like, Les Alexander always stayed out of the front office affairs, but it seems like maybe this last season has kind of pushed his buttons a little bit. So I'm a little worried about the team, but I don't think they deserve the reputation they have now. Like, they've suddenly become the Kings overnight, I think, in everyone's eyes, which,
yeah.
I don't know how much of that is actually the case, how much of it is just, you know, sort of the media Twitter bubble. But they've taken a huge hit. A lot of it's deserved. I don't think it's all deserved. But, I mean, the truth will come out in the pudding, I guess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's deserved, but I also, I mean, I think it's just gone too far. I mean, as Forrest was saying with the coaching search and stuff, Les panicked a little bit, and he had to kind of make a move just to kind of, I don't know, quell all this negative energy and all the bad press the Rockets are getting. And I mean, some of us deserve it. Obviously they underachieved, and you know, Morey didn't make the best decisions, even though like Ty Lawson at the time made sense, and firing Coach McHale kind of seemed like something had to happen. So they've taken some big hits, but I think, I don't think it's a toxic situation or anything like that. I think they're going to recover.
Yeah, you guys brought up a good point about the coaching search, and you know, Mike D'Antoni finally became official a couple of days ago, and I think it's time to talk about him as the coach of the Rockets. It's time to accept it, and let's go ahead and get into that. So initially, right off the bat, I agree with you. I'm not comfortable with this ownership meddling that, you know, Les has suddenly started to do. I think it reeks a lot of what the Kings did with Vivek Ranadive and George Karl. You know, Vivek Ranadive wanted a faster offense, and he brought in George Karl to do his dirty work, and that didn't end well. Mike Malone seemed like a very capable coach at the time, and it seemed like they panic fired him after a bad stretch, which kind of is comparable to what the Rockets did to Kevin McHale. But at the same time, I think sooner or later the Rockets had to move on from Kevin McHale, because I don't think he was the future head coach for the team, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm willing to die on this hill that McHale probably should have been fired a couple of years before he was. He's fine. He's a good development coach, but they suddenly were thrust into the role of a contender sooner than I expected. So they needed to have a contending coach. I really still would have liked to see Jeff Van Gundy, because at least everyone would have loved him. Like, if nothing else, they would have loved him. And they need to get their defense on track. I think he was the right hire, but I sort of think that it's not really the history between him and Alexander, which was the big deal breaker. I sort of think that Alexander just wants that fast up-tempo style that he's been going on about for the past, like, 4, 5, 8 years. So I think that's probably more why Alexander seemed to nix that deal. But yeah, I really think they swung a miss on that one, and that's got to burn some members of the front office up right now.
Yeah, especially Maury. I mean, JVG was his guy, and to not even give JVG an interview is, you know, a little inexcusable. But as you were saying, Les absolutely wants to play that fast pace, exciting offense that, you know, in all seriousness, will likely sell a lot of tickets and make the team fun to watch. So I think that plays a big role in it. And I'm okay with D'Antoni, I guess, as long as that staff around him can really do what they're expected to do and make, you know, bring in the defense. But I don't know.
They're hoping for that, though.
Yeah,
they're really hoping.
They're banking on Jeff Bezdelic for sure.
Yeah, he's got a lot on his plate. So I don't know. I'm going to take a wait and see approach with this. Give D'Antoni a season before I can determine whether or not he's actually going to be a good coach moving forward.
Yeah, and my general approach with these coach hirings is, you know, give these guys 20 games before we judge them. You know, that I'm not too big on killing guys before they even step into office, because I just don't think that's wise. I think we should wait it out. You know, an organization like the Rockets generally does make good coaching hires. I mean, the ones that Lessa have made at least have been, you know, I can't really think of any absurdly bad coach that, you know, Leslie Alexander's hired in his reign. I mean, you look at Jeff Van Gundy, you look at Kevin McHale, you look at Rick Adelman. I mean, they have a pretty good, you know, history with coaches. So I'm gonna bank on them sort of hitting on this hire, but I agree with you, Forrest. I think they should have went after a Frank Vogel type, somebody who brought a defensive culture into this locker room, somebody who held people accountable, somebody who you know, emphasized that end of the floor before, above anything else, above the offense, above all the minutia that goes into playing fast and all that stuff. I just think they really should have went for a head coach guy to run the defense, and that's just my general feeling.
Yeah, your head coach sets your culture. That's you got to pick the culture you want.
Yeah. Next question. With James Harden and Kevin Durant being spotted in Phoenix together, do you think the Rockets actually have a long shot of landing Kevin Durant? So, first of all, you've seen the videos, right? You guys seen the images and the videos of Harden and Durant hanging out together?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what was your initial reaction before we get into, you know, the possibility of landing Durant? What was your initial reaction when you saw the videos?
I mean, they're friends.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
My whole thing is, I'm not big on getting fans' hopes up. Like it really looked like, you know, Twitter exploded for a second. I mean, Rockets Twitter, at least, when they saw those two together. I'm like, they could be just sharing a meal, and they could be just hanging out at a club, and it could be nothing. And that's my whole thing. But at the same time, I think we do have to talk about the possibility of, you know, Durant and Harden and that relationship. And, you know, if Harden can somehow manage to, you know, lure Durant to Houston.
Yeah, it's not a 0% chance. Like, it's definitely not nothing. I think he's probably going to stay where he is because, I mean, they've come about as close as anyone's come to beating the Warriors. But if he leaves, if he decides he does want to move on to somewhere else, I kind of think, you know, Houston is in the mix. They've got Harden, who's his friend. They're establishing a new culture right now. So he can kind of make a go of it in Houston if he feels like it. I wouldn't be that surprised, but it's not very likely. It's extremely unlikely to happen. But that's, I think, mostly because he's extremely unlikely to go anywhere.
Yeah, I agree. I wrote about that. I think this summer is almost a lock that he's staying in OKC to give it, you know, one more try, one more run with Westbrook and Ibaka and that core that they built. But, I mean, as far as Houston goes, I think that they actually do have a chance if he were to leave because of Harden and their friendship. But yeah, no, I think Rockets Twitter needs to relax a little bit because it just looked like a friendly weekend in Arizona. So.
Yeah, and I agree with you, George, in that, you know, I think he's going to stay in OKC for that 1+1. And that brings me to my next topic. I don't think anybody's discussing this. I think the biggest chance the Rockets have at landing Kevin Durant is not this season. I think it's next season. I think this offseason, you know, nobody's discussing this. This could be a setup offseason for next season. You know, if just by building up the credibility of the team again and being good again and being like at least a 45-50 win team, I think there's a chance at Durant next summer, because if he does sign that 1+1 deal, which certainly makes a lot of financial sense because he gets to sign that supermax contract that you talked about in your piece, George. What do you guys think? Do you think I'm speaking out of terms? I think that's a possibility if you can try to make your team good enough, at least in the short term, to where, you know, Houston's a attractive destination again.
Yeah, I mean, until the Rockets have three top 10 players, Morey's always going to be angling to get another one, right? So any possible year that a player like Durant's going to be on the market, they're going to be ready for him. And I think that you can set this cap space up to be able to pick up Durant this year or next year without really too much trouble, especially if Dwight Howard leaves, which he's definitely going to leave. So I think that they're going to try to do that. They don't have to sacrifice anything. They can still sign like an Al Horford or someone and still be able to manufacture some space next season when, once again, the cap's going to jump up a bit.
Yeah, and I think that's something nobody's talking about, because the cap jump is big this summer, but it's definitely going to be big the next summer too. And in the meantime, you can set up a good team, a feasible playoff team, to where you're compelling for free agents, and there's more high-end free agents next year than there are this year. I think it's more attractive for free agents, Houston, in the short term if they get better.
Yeah, and to your point, Salvin, it's this year could do a lot to actually making the Rockets a more desirable destination, I guess, because like we were talking about, that the perception of the team has gone down a little bit, but you can't forget that when Dwight signed in 2013, when he chose Houston, they were just, you know, on the rise, and I think the Rockets could be on the rise again for another potential superstar.
Yeah, and people forget that the fan and media perceptions of teams are not always the same thing as the player and coaching perceptions of teams. It's hard to get a handle on what players are thinking about the Rockets, and that's really what matters more in this situation, how they feel about it. So it's hard to tell. Like, they don't really talk about this kind of thing very much because it's not a thing they have to worry about very often. You know, they just sign a new contract every X number of years. But I wouldn't be surprised if the Rockets aren't really that worse off in the eyes of players who might want to come to Houston, because it still has a reputation for being, you know, a team who's got, you know, it's a good culture, it's a good city, et cetera, et cetera. We've all gone over these factors a lot of times. So it may not be as disastrous as it seems like in terms of free agent search. And, well, I guess we'll have to find that out in a couple of weeks here.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And you look at guys like Jared Dudley. I mean, Jared Dudley's been teasing, you know, Houston all week on Twitter. And I think to him, it doesn't seem like a disaster situation. And I agree with you, Forrest. I think it's not as bad as it seems. And I that's just my biggest problem. You know, when writers write about Houston as this toxic situation, it really kills them as a destination choice. And I don't agree with it being this toxic as, you know, it's being laid out to be.
Yeah, and let's not forget that Jared Dudley is maybe one of the more popular players in the league. Everybody's friends with Jared Dudley, so that could actually help a lot too, on a minor scale.
Yeah, and I think getting the thoughts of a free agent like him, I mean, that helps you understand what other free agents are thinking. I mean, I'm pretty sure, you know, he's not the only free agent that's considering Houston. I mean, he's just one of many, and I think you look at other free agents on the market. Let's go ahead and discuss that. Let's talk about Al Horford, because I really think, you know, as you said at the top of the podcast, George, I think he's a big, big target for Houston. I think if you can make it work, if you can try to convince him and get really quality role players in Houston at the start of the offseason, I think you can land a good free agent like that.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's sign him. I think Horford is a good fit for the team, especially a team that's picking up D'Antoni. Let's say that we end up in the universe where D'Antoni works out really well, which would be fun. then I think he'd fit in really well with a good, you know, fast D'Antoni offense. You have a big man who can run a pick and pop, finally. Finally.
And you have a coach that can execute an inbounds play. I mean, that's not being talked about. I mean, the Rockets haven't had an X's and O's coach in such a long time. I mean, since the Rick Adelman era, and I'm really excited for that. I mean, the past few seasons, I mean, after every timeout, I'm just looking at the players, and they're not even moving. They're not setting screens. It's just James Harden massaging the ball and looking for an opportunity at a late shot clock situation. Also, getting a player like Al Horford, like you said, you know, having someone who can do a pick and pop, I mean, that's a pretty big value in today's NBA. Somebody who can somewhat shoot the three ball, and someone who can definitely hit the 18-footer, I think that's a value. And I think that's something that the Rockets could definitely use, especially in D'Antoni's system. I think he's versatile enough to run the floor in D'Antoni's system. I think he's certainly a good enough pick and roll threat and a good enough passer out of the pinch post and out of pick and roll action to where it's a viable option.
I mean, let me ask you guys, do you think there's any way in which Al Horford is not significantly better than Terrence Jones?
Oh man, his hit.
No.
Like, not in any facet of the game, right? He's just a complete upgrade in every way. Yeah. I mean, yeah. So that's important it would be.
And that's an understatement. Like, the word upgrade just on its own is a major mistake, especially after the season Terrence Jones had. But I just to add another thing that Al Horford could do, I mean, just a trailing big that can hit the mid-range shot or even step it out beyond the three-point line. I think that's going to help a lot if James Harden's going to take on like the Steve Nash role and make early decisions.
Yeah, and Paul wrote about this, the trailer big, in his pieces this week. He talked about how there's always, in Mike D'Antoni's system, there's always a trailer big. And I agree with you. Al Horford can certainly be that guy. Another guy who can be that trailer big is Ryan Anderson. And I think, you know, if the Rockets can get him for a manageable contract, which I'm not sure if they can, but if they can manage to get him for, you know, under $20 million, which I doubt. Like, let's just assume he gets $19 million. I think that's a pretty good pickup. I think that's a pretty. I think he can also run a pick and pop. He can also do a lot of things out of the post. He can be that trailer big, as you talked about, George. And I think there's a lot of things you can work with right there.
Man, the question this offseason is going to be, what's a manageable contract? I think that's the hardest question.
Yeah.
And all the different GMs are going to have to try to figure out how much is too much. And a lot of that involves kind of looking at a crystal ball and seeing what the league's going to be like in a couple of years as the cap keeps rising. So we may see some real smart GMs give some players some real big money on some mid-length contracts and stuff. So, yeah, I would hope not to pay that much for Ryan Anderson, but it's probably not a huge deal if that does happen. And he can definitely help out in that kind of offense. I do worry about his defense, but that ship has kind of already sailed.
My general thought is, I think under this new cap, the average contract for a starter is going to be somewhere around $15 million. So, I mean, as soon as July 1st hits, you're going to see some ridiculous contract. It's going to surprise the hell out of everybody. Like, what? This guy is getting paid this much and, you know, X amount, and it's going to surprise everybody. And I agree with you, Forrest. I think there's going to be a lot of absurd contracts being given out. And, you know, the teams that take advantage of giving out those, you know, those huge contracts for short-term deals, those are going to be the teams that thrive. You know, the teams like Portland last year, who gave out, you know, at the start of as soon as July 1st hit, and they figured out that LaMarcus Aldridge wasn't going to re-sign with them. They went after a whole bunch of good contract guys, a whole bunch of good role players. And I think, you know, Houston could sort of do a similar thing in you know, going after very good role players instead of going after that superstar.
Yeah. And if you thought, like, for example, a couple years ago, or maybe it was last season, if you thought Danny Green's 3-year, $45 million contract was absurd, just wait till you see what happens this summer and next summer, especially with guys like Festus Ezeli, Harrison Barnes, Kent Bazemore, Alan Crabb. Those kind of guys are going to get big contracts. So maybe 19 a year for Ryan Anderson isn't so bad. And he's also a Maury guy. Maury's wanted to get Ryan Anderson for a long time. So I think it's very possible and not terrible.
But what's the retread that Moore's going to pick up this summer? Who's he gonna reacquire that he had on the team 3 years ago? Well, That's the real question.
It's got to be Jeremy Lin, right? I mean,
it's
got to
be Jeremy Lin.
I mean,
that'd be fun. I'm on board.
Yeah, I like Jeremy Lin. Like, I think Jeremy Lin gets a bad rep. A lot of it because of his fan base, his insane fan base. You know, a lot of bloggers like us, like, we're tired of hearing those guys. And but at the same time, he's a quality player. And I think he got a lot of unfair criticism in that Portland series because I just think he's a good, solid player. I think he's a good off-the-bench point guard, a guy who can...
Everyone got a lot of unfair criticism in that Portland series. The farther away I get from it, the more I just look back at it as this weird fluke that was horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think he's a point guard that can run a good pick and roll. He's a guy who can handle the ball when Harden sits. He can run the offense really, really well while not handling the ball so much. And I just think that's a good player to add. And he's shown success in D'Antoni's system in New York during Lin's sanity. And I think, you know, we talked about it in previous podcasts. I'd like to get him. If the Rockets can manage to get him for a good contract, and it seems like Charlotte's not going to be able to re-sign him because of their cap situation and because of the contract Lin's on currently. I think that's a pretty intriguing option.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think there was actually a Rick Bucher report today on Bleacher Report that said Houston is one of the preferred spots that'll land Jeremy Lin this summer.
Yeah, but I mean, that's Rick Bucher. I mean,
oh, yeah, exactly.
Wait, you mean he's not mad about the thing with the jersey from a couple years ago? He's not, like, yelling about that into the mirror every night for the last 2 years?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it is we don't know, right? Because we don't know a lot of what these players are thinking. And so, you know, people would make up these, you know, these things about, you know, just perceptions that we think that players take hardly and think about during free agency. I mean, a lot of it is just money. And just situation and winning. And I think if you can get a situation where you can land a good situation, a good contract, and a winning situation, I think above all else, all, you know, bygones will be bygones. And I think you can still manage to get a guy like that.
Yeah, time and money heal all wounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think Daryl Morey still has Aaron Brooks' phone number for yet another return?
Could he be like an assistant coach, maybe? Is it over right now?
It's Chuck Hayes, man. I'm telling you, it's going to be Chuck Hayes. He's going to come back. He's going to teach Clint Capella all this magic stuff. I mean, and that's what's going to happen, man. He's
going to be a toughness coordinator.
Yeah, he's gonna join the staff. I mean,
yeah, man, bring the Chuck Wagon back again.
Yeah, I'd be on board. I like Chuck Wagon. I'd be on board to bring him back. And seems like the Rockets would... I mean, it seems like Daryl Morey's been trying to get him on board for a while in some sort of capacity with the organization. And he spent a lot of time in the earlier years with the season. But we're talking too much about Chuck Hayes.
No, there's no such thing.
Yeah.
We're talking too much about Chuck Hayes. And I want to talk about other things. So let's go ahead and talk about guys who are under contract right now and guys who you think will stay on the team, because I don't think that's being discussed enough. The guys who are on favorable contracts, like Trevor Ariza, like Patrick Beverley, guys who you think would stay on the same team. Who do you guys think is a lock to stay at this point?
I mean, Beverley and Capella, obviously, but that's not probably what you're asking about, because they're too locky.
Yeah, that's too much of a lock.
Yeah, and I think Clint Capella is... I think the only person outside of Harden that's maintained, that's probably going to stay next year because of how enticing of a prospect he is. I mean, we've talked about it so much on this podcast. I'd love to see a D'Antoni system with James Harden and Clint Capella pick and rolls for days. I mean, just as a nerd, I'd love to see it. And that's like something I want to see. I want to see endless pick and rolls with Clint Capella, and I think he's locked to stay. I want to talk about the contracts. So I want to talk about Trevor Ariza. So Trevor Ariza is probably the most unsure, you know, guy if he's going to stay or not. And in my opinion, if you can get two more quality wings or one or two, just and surround Trevor Ariza with those guys, and you can maybe bring Trevor Ariza off the bench because his contract is good enough to where you can, you know, manage to do that and, you know, nobody bats an eye, I think you can still keep him. I think you can still probably keep him. If you can get like a Nick Batum, if you can get like a Kent Bazemore and you bring Trevor Ariza off the bench, I think that's a guy you try to keep. And, you know, his defense did drop off this year. In transition, he was just an absolute, you know, dumpster fire this year. And he went from fifth in defensive RPM to 30th. And I just think, I don't think it's realistic. I think he can do much better than that. I just think he didn't play this well, you know, good this year because of disinterest above all else.
Yeah.
What do you guys
think? Can't calibrate from this year. This year is, like, the last 2 years have both been really impossible to zero in on. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle, so it's hard to tell how good players are. Ariza is better than this. He just is. This year was terrible. It really looked like he was just kind of playing out the string for a long time, which is not what you want, but, you know, it's better that you have a bad season from, like, a bad situation than you're just bad now. So I think he'll be back and he'll be fine next season. Unless they get a pretty big haul for him, I don't think they're going to move him, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. And if I'm not mistaken, his salary actually decreases every year. So it's a good deal to have, especially with the cap going up. I agree that Trevor's better than he was this year. And I think he can get back to, you know, his good defense and good 3-point shooting. But if a guy like Nick Batum comes in, then Ariza is probably expendable.
That contract makes it much more favorable. I mean, that was an absolute steal looking back at it, because nobody knew the cap was going to explode this much. I mean, $8 million a year for 4 years, that's pretty damn good. And I think that somebody, you know, if you can try to keep him on the books, I certainly wouldn't be opposed to it. Our next question, who could they potentially draft or trade as far as their pick situation go? So the Rockets have 2 second-round picks this season, and I don't think they're willing to trade any of those guys. I think as far as who they're going to draft, I'll be honest, I haven't paid too much attention to this draft. What about you guys?
I am not a college basketball guy. I never know anything about any draft class. That's like my biggest weak point. I just have no idea who's out there, especially in a second round. There's almost no point in even trying to predict the second round. I don't know.
I don't even watch college ball. It's not a product that's appealing to me. So I have no idea about this draft class. But just to kind of talk about what the Rockets have done in the past, I mean, with 2 second-round picks, it's not – I think Morey's going to try hard to move those picks into maybe 1 first-rounder or some kind of quality player of some sort.
There was a report from Alex Kennedy today that there's talk of a lot of movement in this draft, because so many teams have a lot of picks. You look at Boston, you look at Phoenix, and, you know, there's a lot of teams with a lot of picks. So there could be a lot of movement in this draft. And, you know, I think that's something to look forward to. And I'm with you guys. I have no idea about who they're going to draft. I don't watch college basketball. I think it's an inferior product. There's no reason to watch it for me.
They always pull out someone in the second round you've never heard of anyway, right?
Yeah, like Clint Capella.
It's totally unpredictable, especially with Morey. He just has people watching every EuroLeague out there.
Yeah, I mean, especially with Clint Capella. In that draft, I was at the Rockets draft party for that draft, and when Clint Capella's name was announced, everybody just looked at each other like, you know who this guy is? Like, nobody knew who he was, and that's usually the kind of guy that Morey drafts. He drafts Eurostash guys and these guys that nobody's ever heard of, and, you know, like this year, everybody thought the Rockets were going to draft a point guard because that was their biggest need, and they went ahead and drafted Sam Decker. So, and that's no slight to Sam Decker. I'm just saying we have no idea who the Rockets are going to draft. Honestly, if you were to ask me now, I think they tried to move the pick, maybe. But at the same time, having a second-round pick is, you know, it's nice to have that influx of young talent keep coming into your roster.
Yeah, and unless they can move up to a player they really care about, they're probably not going to worry about moving picks too much unless they get some need out of it. Like, I don't think they're going to try to climb up in this draft. I think if you do see them make a trade, it'll be to, you know, get some kind of a budget veteran or something, just someone to shore up chemistry or wing depth or something.
I want to talk about the Eurostash guys, because I think this is the year Sergio Yule comes over.
Finally.
Yeah, I'm serious. I think this is the year, because we've been talking about it for so long, and it just feels like a gut feeling. I just think this is the year. Because nobody's talking about it, and this is usually when this kind of stuff happens. And his contract makes it so where he'd make more money in the NBA this season than staying in Spain. And I think this is the year. And I think getting a point guard like that would surely be enticing to Morey, especially with their guard situation right now.
It'd be fun. It'd be fun to actually see him, but I can't jump on that one yet. I'll see. I'll believe when I see it.
Yeah. Yeah, because wasn't this the case last year, that he was pretty close to coming over, but it just didn't happen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that felt like a sure thing, and this doesn't feel like a sure thing. That's why I think it's going to happen. Like,
this Rocket season has trained you well.
Yeah.
Believe the unexpected can happen.
Yeah, and And also, it's also the contract. He can make much more money in the NBA if he were to come over and you know, sign for maybe a mid-level or maybe a good contract. I think he'd make a lot more money here than he would in Spain, and that's the primary reason. I think if you can try to get, you know, Sergio Llull, he's still fairly young. I think he's 30 just about, and I think he's an exciting player. I think he'd fit in Mike D'Antoni's system extraordinarily well. I think he likes to run. He's a pretty good pick-and-roll player. He can shoot the three ball. He can attack the basket. And I think that'd be a pretty good pickup if the Rockets can manage to get him this year. Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, we're spinning in circles here. We have no idea what to talk about anymore. We're at a dead point in the NBA season. But I really wanted to get a podcast out today because it's been a while since we had a podcast in. And I vowed that I'd try to get one out at least once once every 2 weeks. You know, there really wasn't any emergency need to get one out today. But you know, I figured, hey, there's no podcast out right now, and I figured it's a good time because we haven't done one in a while. So yeah, you can follow us on Twitter at Red Nation Hoops, at George Flores 22, and at Do Not. And you can follow all of Forrest's work at red94.net. He does a lot of great work for Red 94. He does all the post game work. I really enjoy reading his stuff. He does the game breakdowns after every game, and they're really amusing. They're really entertaining because it's not just the play breakdowns he does. It's not just the stats that he goes into. It's the he goes into the Rocket situation at large at the current moment.
And because I literally cannot help doing that. But I appreciate that. Thank you.
No, it's amusing because your post game piece is sort of like a state of the Rockets piece after every game. I like to check up on, especially this season where it's been, you know, I've been looking for positive things to read, and you know, you provided me with the exact opposite. And
I tried to be positive this season, but eventually I just like, no, I'm just gonna go with whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah. So you can check out his work at red94.net. You can check out all our work at rednationhoops.com. George wrote a column on Kevin Durant's free agency. I think that's a pretty good column. You should go check it out. Paul wrote a piece on, you know, how the Rockets can fit under Mike D'Antoni, and I wrote something on how James Harden specifically can fit in under Mike D'Antoni, and then Steve Nash role. You can follow the podcast at The Red Nation Hoops on SoundCloud and The Red Nation Hoops Podcast on iTunes, and give it a rating. Give us a 5-star rating and give us a comment, because that really helps. If you don't like the podcast, go to somebody else's podcast, give them a negative rating, come back to ours and give us a good rating, because that's just the way you should do it. Good night, guys.